Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. What do you know? Today's Tuesday, September 19th, and Rachel is back with us.
I am back.
And I'm excited.
I listened to some of the
show yesterday
because I was like, I wonder who's here, what's going on, did they miss me, did anyone even notice?
You needed to make sure you're...
Was I missed?
And make sure the home front is still functioning, right?
I know. I was like, are they connected? Do they have Wi-Fi? Is there internet? Is Sam surviving? Did the guests show up?
I was in bed wondering this.
I missed you guys.
Well, we miss you too, Rachel. And it was fun. I mean, we had an author. We were talking about oubliettes. Do you know what that is?
I was listening a little bit. It was there are different types of dungeons, or what do they call them? Is it not dungeons, but
oubliettes? That's what they call them, and it's a French name,
right?
And apparently, what it is they build like holes in the ground,
right,
in the castle,
right?
And they throw people in there,
right, as forms of like torture,
right?
Right. It's like jail, no?
To get rid of them, no. I mean, they don't come back.
Oh, to just get rid of them. Oh, you don't.
They don't come back. Yeah,
interesting.
It's called.
That sounds like I could picture a few ex-boyfriends. That would be perfect for,
right?
For sure.
God. And sometimes they put spikes on the bottom. Can you imagine?
Sounds
so for
amazing.
Slow death, I know. So you think we're living in hard times? My God, man. So that was interesting. And I guess she says people are dumped there to be forgotten,
mm-hmm,
pretty much, you know.
Perfect.
And oubliette means forgotten
you
place.
You could defriend people off Facebook, or you could just send them down the
to
oubliette,
a fucking,
you know,
thing.
That's whatever.
Oh,
you
my
decide.
God. But if you guys are interested in that, it sounds like a pretty scary story. It goes back in time. It's like a novel, and it's very educational too. So it's pretty cool. She did a lot of research.
Yeah, that's what I saw. And then also, there you guys were talking about in some movies, it's depicted some of these things, right?
Right, that's true. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, Silence of the Lambs, I guess. Something like
sounds
that.
Sounds very Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, right. So Vanta M. Black is her name, and you guys can get the book anywhere. At any rate, we're going to get to our show. Later, we're going to have another author calling in, but she's not here in town, so she'll be calling in. And that's it. We have a great show. So you can tell us about Vegas, but we did have an earthquake here last night.
Yes, we did.
Apparently, not everybody felt it, but if you're in L.A., in the immediate vicinity, you felt it. And it was a very short, it was just one boom.
I said,
but it shook the whole earth.
Yeah, I didn't feel it. I just said, that wasn't an earthquake. That was me taking a hit from my bong.
Oh.
But
you
think
it shook the earth?
But
huh?
It's weird because, like, you know how sometimes we think we hear our cell phones, but we don't,
right?
You know,
uh-huh.
I feel like I have that with earthquakes. Like,
me too,
I feel like,
you know?
I feel the earth moving, and I'm like, is the earth moving, or is that a motorcycle outside? You know what I mean? Like, something shaking the building. So
with me, it's like I'll take a nap in the afternoon, mm-hmm, and I feel like I'm swaying or something. Right.
Maybe, but I do think, cause I have that app that tells you like the tremors or whatever and the earthquakes and stuff. But maybe we just do. Maybe we are feeling the earth move, and we're just very sensitive or in tune. Or maybe we're just stoned. I don't know. You know?
We are stoned.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm usually stoned.
For
so
sure.
You never know. But,
for sure.
But it was scary because it gets you to start thinking again about the earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
And where were you? It was like 11:20 last night.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you not feel it?
I was sleeping.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's why. Yeah.
I fell asleep really, pretty early. And to be honest, I did feel an earthquake. When I first moved here, I was out at a restaurant, and I felt the earthquake. And then we saw the lights shake.
Yeah.
And then one other time, and this is one that woke me up in the middle of my sleep. That scared the shit out of me. Was when, because it's also, it could be a 3.5, but what kind of earthquake is it? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So if it's more to the surface or lower, you know, depending. So like those ones freak me out. Like, and that's the only time I've been freaked out where I woke up in the middle of the night was like, oh my fucking God, I felt that earth move. You know, that's a frightening thing.
I know. When it does the swaying motion, you're like, this building's going to fucking
or
collapse.
Like the yeah, they're all pretty terrifying.
They're
all
terrifying.
So.
This one was a single hit, but man, it was like the earth got hit by a comet or something.
Wow. Yeah, no, you felt it?
I felt it. Yeah. I was sitting outside on my balcony reading.
Yeah, because you're up late.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I usually do. I'll sit outside where it's nice, read, and and suddenly, boom.
Wow.
And I felt the whole building shake. And you go, you know, this is not just someone dropping something. I mean,
right.
You feel the whole fucking earth move.
Right.
So, yeah, that's pretty scary, you know. And after I saw the movie San Andreas, got me really scared because it visually shows you what could happen.
Is it accurate? Like, is it pretty...
Probably.
You know, like,
I mean, look, it's like the earthquake and it floods San Francisco. They're showing you a lot of destruction there. And... Yeah, I guess.
Did
it
you
is
hear
possible.
About that building in San Francisco that's sinking? Like they built this luxury residential tower, and when they built it, they said that you know it was the zoning was okay, that it was livable, like the people could whatever.
Right.
And then they're starting to see over time, like it's like sinking 17 inches, and it's like it's tipping like 14, you know, and the residents are pissed because. They bought these. They can't sell them. They don't want to move into them. You know what I mean? So and there's nothing.
Really,
you can
look nobody's going to give them the money back.
It's pretty fucked up. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole building. Speaking of Vegas, they built City Center a few years ago. You know where they have the Aria or whatever, and one of those buildings there is unlivable. Like they built this whole thing, and they found out that it's not up to standards or whatever. But they can't. Implode it because there's hotels all around it, so they have to take it down piece by piece. I mean, it's just a nightmare.
My God.
It's just a nightmare.
Yeah. So that's that little thing on the strip where they have the Aria and the Vidara, right?
Yeah. It's called City Center.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember that when they were building it, I stayed at the Vidara. That's a great hotel if you don't want a casino downstairs.
Right, it's smoke-free.
Right, smoke-free, casino-free.
I think kid-free or something, maybe.
Just a hotel, and it's got the best lavender smell ever.
Yeah.
When you walk in, it's just amazing. So, and that's a different experience on the Strip, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I'm surprised how expensive hotels have gotten in Vegas for the weekends.
Yeah.
Like, you know, $300-$500 a night.
It depends on when you go. If it's fight weekend or, you know, we have a lot of conferences going around. It's kind of that season.
Right.
So, yeah, of course, if it's the weekend of the fight, tickets, I mean, hotel rooms are going to be $300.
But, you know, even without a fight, I mean, I think I looked for this weekend or something.
Yeah, there was
a
fight this weekend.
This weekend?
Mm-hmm.
This coming? This coming
the
weekend.
The upcoming weekend?
Yeah. I mean, if you look like every Saturday, I'll bet you, Friday, Saturday. I mean, like the Venetian, $350. Okay, it's nice, but it's not the top of the line.
Venetian's a nice hotel. It's one of the nicest on the Strip. Yeah, I mean,
right,
it depends. Is that just for a standard room you're talking?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Vegas is getting expensive. Have you
but it's also still season. I mean, you go out there, it's 90 degrees.
Right.
There are people at the pool, you know what I mean? So, like, it's September, you know, other places in the country, like, pool season's over, but not for us.
Right.
You know what
so
I mean? We still have a little,
here.
We have another month or so. Mm-hmm.
Probably. But you're right. It's always supply and demand, you know? I mean,
yeah.
If there's more people wanting it, they jack up
for
the
sure.
prices.
It's true. You got to find 100%. Like, you got to find, there has to be some app that's, like, alerts you and prices go down or whatnot.
Yeah. But it's pretty easy to figure out. Don't go Friday and Saturday if you don't want to spend a
for
lot
sure.
of money, you
for
know?
Sure.
Because that's when everybody goes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. So you were in Vegas.
Yeah, we were in Vegas. We threw my girl, Sam Grody, very funny comedian. We'll get her in here, too. We went to college together. We were in the same sorority, and she's the whole reason. Like
okay,
I said,
now you posted a picture. Is she the naked one with a pillow on her? Or was
no,
that
was
one?
Gabby.
Okay.
That's my girl, Gabby. We have to get her in here, too. She's so funny.
How do you ignore that picture? I mean,
she's so funny.
Naked, covered
she's just
by
so funny.
Yeah.
Gabby, she's there. I mean... I'm so grateful to be surrounded by such funny girls, you know, like that just don't give a shit and they're good, good girls. Yeah, my girl Sam is the blonde one and she produced her first comedy show. I helped her out. I did some footwork for her, but like I'm going to help co-produce with her moving forward. Her first comedy show in Vegas and it was successful. We had,
really?
You know, the comedians showed up. They did their sets. It was a packed room.
Oh.
I think they're going to have us come back for a monthly show there. So, and that's, yeah, cool. We had, you know, really successful comedians on our show. So, I mean,
what kind of a venue was it? Like a casino?
No, it was like kind of imagine like the Improv or, you know, but off the Strip.
Okay.
And it's an event space, but it's beautiful. It's all brand new. I mean, they have a podcast studio in there and they have a huge room, 300 seats for like concerts and events. And then they have the backspace, which is kind of like, you know, the belly room at the Comedy Store or the Improv Lab, like the smaller room that seats about 80 people. So we did it in that to kind of like see, you know, our first show.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's difficult to get people out to a comedy show, you know, not in LA. In it's easy, you know what I mean? There's comedy everywhere, people like it, it's expected. But in Vegas, you know, the cool thing is this venue is not on the Strip, it's not in a casino, so you're not going to pay $50 a ticket.
Right.
You know, the shows at each hotel are, you know, the prices are expensive. But here, the tickets were $20. We dropped them down, you know, to whatever. And
is it more for locals than tourists? I mean, if it's off the Strip, it probably
is. If it's off the Strip,
right?
Ideally, what I would like to do moving forward is like give locals a discount or whatever, and then or just, you know, make tickets more affordable, like $15, $10. You know what I mean? Because there's no reason to be paying that
much. And it's not even the price. I think you just got to let them know that it happens. You know, I'm sure in Vegas people look for a lot of stuff to do.
Right. And that's the thing is it's Vegas. So like it's a Saturday night. They could be out doing anything. Like we need to entice them somehow. But the event space is so cool. The owner is amazing. You know, and it was just like a really great weekend. And then
it's awesome. Did you see your family?
I did. My sister came out to the show and brought friends. I saw my parents. And then on Sunday I had brunch and connected with some people in the cannabis industry out there, some lobbyists and people who work in the advertising and marketing cannabis company. And it was just cool to see what they're doing out there. And also like the struggles that Vegas has. Like there's no place to openly consume out there.
Yeah, right.
True story. I have a story for you guys.
Really?
Okay. So after the show, we all of us went back to the Aria, all the comics, whatever, to have a drink. And I looked to Sam. I was like, I could really go for a joint right now. And I was like, it's legalization, you know. So we step outside of the hotel. We go to the pickup area for valet. And we light up a joint, like around an ashtray, right? And then the security guard comes over to us and is like, you have to put that out. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And like, my friend was like, not listening to her. Cause she's, you know, had a couple drinks or whatever. And she's a pretty girl and she doesn't listen to anyone. And I totally understand, but like, and listen, I will defy anyone. I will not listen to anyone. I'm all about breaking the rules, but there is one person I will not disrespect. And that is a black woman. I will always listen to black women. Like I am so afraid. Like if I'm going to get sent to jail, it's going to be in this type of situation. So like immediately I drop into like politician mode. I take the joint out of her hand. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
we'll put this out, you know what I mean? Like where normally I'm like, I don't give a fuck, you know. Like, so it was just really funny to see, you know, because I truthfully I was like, what are the, you know, I know that it's legal, but I didn't know how serious they were about not consuming
right
in public.
Wow, shit. And I when I would go to Vegas, I'd consume driving all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And,
if they're,
I
mean, very be careful on
I
Vegas
know,
open
I
consumption
know. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not going there anymore. I mean I have no attraction
they're
for
trying
Vegas
to they're
anymore.
Trying to change it, true.
But that's crazy. I mean, so you can't consume anywhere, really.
You can only consume in your private homes,
right? Not in the hotel. The hotel will kick you out. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, and that's why I always find like places in nature. And I go there and smoke, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know where's another good place? Is parking lots. And you just park at the edge of it where nobody can smell, you know. And
well,
you just,
the thing is,
you
is
be
ideally,
away from
you got. Well, you just they don't want people out on the roads.
Right.
Driving,
but that was pretty bold,
you know?
To do that in the front of the hotel. I mean, I would never.
I know. But that's the thing.
How
it's like
strong
she could have. And here's the thing. She could have, easily arrest, like, that's, she could have gotten, we could have gotten in trouble for that. Like,
yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Serious trouble. And like, that's just not a phone call I want to make to my parents. Like, if I'm going to make a phone call, it's going to be because I murdered someone.
Right.
You know, not because I smoked weed. Like, that would just be like, of course.
And that's,
you know, and
like
the last thing I
right?
want my parents to ever utter are the words, of course, accompanied with an eye roll. You know
yeah,
what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
So, like, if I were to call them, they would just be like, yeah, I'm sorry, the number you have called is not, you know what I mean? Same last
this
name, pure
is.
Coincidence, you know? None. We look the same, yeah. No idea.
We never, don't know who
yeah,
you are.
No idea.
Okay, well, let me take the call now. I guess it's calling right on time, and that's cool. So, let's see if the line goes in. And we're going to be joined by Nanishka Torres. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
Good. Hello. Good morning to you.
Oh, I'm sorry?
I said good morning to you. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, well, thank you. And good morning to you all as well. I hope you're all
thank
doing
you.
Well today.
We are. We're having
we're
fun
great.
Here, laughing like crazy about things. But Nanishka, where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling from New Jersey, down in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Oh, okay, cool. And so do you ever come out to L.A. at all? Have you been here?
No, actually, I haven't been yet, but that's definitely on my list of places to go.
Yeah, you have to come here. I mean, you know, and especially if you're a writer and everything, a lot of action here. But I guess in New York also, right? A lot of publishing
oh,
going
absolutely.
On there. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. So you're an author. And
I am, or at least working on it.
you are an author,
right, and a published one at that, so there you go, you know, I mean,
very true. My mom loves telling people that too.
Really? Well, she's
anyone.
Proud of you, you know. I mean, what do you expect, you know? Here, have you read my daughter's book? Pick it, you know, pick it up and stuff.
Exactly. That, oh, you've met her, I see. Oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way to do it, you know. Wow. So you've been so I just read your bio just a little bit, but you've been writing for a long time?
Oh yeah, since I mean I loved writing since I was about 5 years old. I wrote a short story that kind of got me in trouble in school when
that's
I was in the third grade.
Awesome. So, I need to be friends with people great. Like that's what I see
Rachel
that's the
is
kind
looking
I'm
for
all
trouble.
About breaking the rules.
Yeah.
In the, you know?
I didn't mean to. It's just people took the story very seriously. Zombie apocalypses were
love
not
it.
As awesome back in 1998 as they are now.
Right.
So yeah, people didn't know how to handle it.
So you wrote a book about zombie apocalypse. That's very.
Oh well, that was the short story in the third grade.
Oh,
my current book, The Prince, is more like a fantasy science fiction novel about a prince, as you would guess. And his boyfriend is kidnapped. That he's like religious extremist, and he has to enlist the help of his own enemy to bring him back home safely.
Wow! So you created a world of your own here, right? A new world.
Yes.
And I'm always fascinated by that, you know, because I'm thinking. It's hard enough to write about this world that we already know. So to go and make up an entire world and, you know, sometimes languages and culture and stuff is unbelievable to me. You know, you're not just worried about the characters and the plot, but also the setting and yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
There's a lot behind this. How long did it take you to write The Prince?
Well, the story first came to me when I was back in high school, so almost. Actually 10 years ago now and I just like I kind of wrote it down just like a really rough draft idea of what I wanted to write, and it never seemed to like come out of me properly. I would start it, get a few pages in, then I would hate it and delete everything, and then finally I managed to like get a new sense of inspiration, and I just sat down and managed to write the whole thing out in a year, and that's the copy that exists today.
Wow, a year. Wow. So, but you did have the story in your head already, right?
Yeah, it okay. was just festering in there, and I couldn't find a proper way to tell it. I couldn't know like the path that these characters were supposed to take, and it very much changed from the first version I had in mind to what I managed to finish.
Yeah. Now, I always wonder, you know, because some authors say some stories sort of write themselves, and some of them you already know the ending, how it's going to end. Is that with you? I mean, when you write, do you go on a journey with the story and never really knowing how it's going to end, or do you have a complete story before you sit down and write?
I try to have a complete story before I, you know, even start writing, or at least put some ideas down of where I want things to go. To me, it helps a lot knowing how it's going to end, so that way I can make sure that everything builds up to that and makes sense once I reach that ending. But right. I also definitely understand the authors who feel like they're discovering it along the way, because that's also what this one felt like. Like suddenly someone told me the whole story and said, oh no, it goes like this. And then I finally understood and I was able to write it down. That just happened in my own brain, but that's definitely how it felt.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. So a year to write a book. Now, do you sometimes get discouraged when, you know, there are probably days when you get writer's block or you get distracted or whatever? I mean, I would imagine being a writer is a pretty, like, say, lonely job because you do it on your own. And, you know, and then you just like, you know, can get distracted and everything. Do you have that? Is that like a frustration that you have?
Oh my goodness, constantly. I feel like writer's block kind of owns my butt half the time. especially, I'm currently writing the second book, and that one has been far more difficult than the first, because I'm still kind of trying to hammer out all the details and make sure, again, like everything makes sense and reaches that end point the way I want it to. So yeah, there's a whole lot of being stuck, rereading what I wrote and hating it and wanting to delete everything, a lot of distractions. And then, I mean, I work full time, you know, not in writing and in a whole other industry, but that takes up a lot of time as well. So it's a constant battle trying to make sure I can sit down and write when I do manage to have the time to do so.
Yeah, that's why I think it's so rewarding once the book is out. You know, it's like, hey, the baby is born, you know, after gestation for so long. So, yeah.
Especially because this is the first book I'd ever finished. You know, I have so many stories that I've started writing or have ideas to write and complete one day. This was the first one that I actually ever completed. This was huge.
Yeah, I know. Wow. For those of you joining us, we're talking to author Nanishka Torres. She's calling in from New Jersey. She wrote the book The Prince. And so this is about sort of like what, a dystopian world?
Or is that not like necessarily. It's definitely a different world than ours. It takes place in like an alternate realm, but also toward the future. They have a lot of like technological advances that hopefully we'll reach one day. But it is a great world to be in, but as with any world, it's not perfect. And there are definitely people who will disagree and will go to extreme lengths to prove their point. So it's still within that vicinity of realism, even though it's a whole other place.
Right. Quite science fiction in a way too, right? I mean, the thing is, you're thinking technology up ahead. That's pretty impressive. What are some of the things, for example, that we can expect if the world develops in the way you see it?
Received in feedback from most people who have read it, they were always very surprised that these characters had, you know, cell phones and cars and these helicarriers that go high up into the air, and because they were expecting it to take place in the past. Once they heard a prince and I heard a castle, they assumed it was going to be like knights and armor and everything.
Right.
But I definitely wanted it to be more advanced, and a lot of what I visualized came from a video game that I love so much, called Final Fantasy 15, and it's also very technologically advanced as well, with, you know, like these flying boards and these earpieces that can communicate from, you know, miles and miles away, and all this kind of technology that allows people to see where everyone is, especially within the military that I created in this world. Yeah, I wanted it definitely to have some of the pieces of the past, with like a royal family, and there is a castle, and they still do, you know, fight occasionally with swords as well as with, you know, heavy artillery, like automatic weapons. I just loved that combination and those two kind of almost polar opposite worlds being blended into one. I just think it's so beautiful in my head, and even when I see it depicted elsewhere, like in that video game I mentioned, or in the show Kings, which I also really love.
Yeah. Wow. That, I mean, that's pretty cool. It takes quite an imagination to come up with a story like this. You know, I mean, I love reading stories like this. I don't think I could ever come up with one. But so I salute you for that. The book is The Prince, Nanishka Torres. I see you can get it on audiobook, on Kindle. Is it in print as well?
Yes, you can get it in print through Amazon as well.
Okay, cool.
Which is my favorite verse. Print is the best.
Yeah. Well, but this is called like, what is it? Fenrir Chronicles? How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, Fenrir. Yes.
Okay, Fenrir. Well, I said it correctly. So the book is actually, you got to look it up as Fenrir Chronicles, F-E-N-R-I-R, The Prince. So that's how you're going to find it. Now, also, in reading a little bit of background, your characters, or at least the main one, are gay, right? So so this is like something that, how did that come about for you? I mean, when you write a story, I would imagine it would have been easier for you to write it from, I don't know, maybe a straight point of view or something, because it's so much more common. But right. You got into the mind of a gay man, and that's interesting. So tell me a little bit about that. I'm really interested.
Well, actually, humorously enough, that was the first part of the story that came to me. I've always loved reading, and I've been reading since I was able to read. So I've noticed, exactly like you said, the commonality of heterosexual characters. I wasn't finding a lot of characters from the LGBTQ community that were present at all in a story, let alone main characters of the story. And when I would manage to find gay characters in a story, their whole the whole story or their whole conflict revolved around them being gay.
That's
which
so interesting.
Shouldn't be a conflict.
Right.
It's not
true, right?
A problem.
It should be it's a non-issue.
Right.
Exactly. So that was the first thing that came to me. I knew I wanted to write a gay character where his homosexuality had nothing to do with what's going on, because it shouldn't have anything to do with whatever is happening in their lives. That's just another facet of them.
That's so cool.
So that's exactly why I wanted to write those.
That's so interesting, and I think that it's important that we have people like you creating that content that represents LGBTQ people in a way that, like, their sexuality is not, it's a non-issue. It's not, that's not everything about this person. It's a part of this person, but this person has a story independently from their sexuality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's really
exactly
cool.
What I wanted.
That's really cool. Because it's up to people, it's up to people like the creators, and it's up to people like us to put that content out there. It's kind of the same for the cannabis community. You know, the way that's, you know, people who consume cannabis are represented in the media is not always true to the actual, you know what I mean? It's up to us to create that content, and the responsibility to show, and it, you know, to show people that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that there's more to them than this one little part.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it keeps running every part of them. And I mean, and I have to thank my brother, whom is going to let this go right to his head. but I have to thank my brother for really pointing out, and he's a therapist, and he's so fantastic and always enlightening me to the ways of the world and the problems we're constantly facing. And he really brought it to my attention that even while he was reading, he still saw this character as a white male heterosexual, and every time you know, he was reminded that this was a gay character and that he really has no idea what this character looks like, what, you know, what his ethnicity is or anything like that. I really wanted to make it a point that all of my characters and every story I write come from a minority group that's not nearly well enough represented, whether it's the LGBTQ community or people of color, disabled people, mentally ill, like every minority group that doesn't get nearly enough exposure as being main characters and as being people in general, especially heroes. I mean, they are just as valid and they have a story to tell. And I want to make sure that I at least do that. If that's the only thing I'm known for, I'd be a happy person.
Yeah, right. And well, so I mean, that pretty much tells us which side of the spectrum politically you're on, right? And we need people like you, you know, to really bring these things up and actually make every ethnicity, every person really part of the story, part of reality, regardless of who they are. You know, it shouldn't be even a factor when we socialize with people and deal with them.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And it's unfortunate that it is so, you know, underrepresented and not displayed nearly enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took my tiny part to try to change that.
Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm. Well, Nanishka Torres, guys, go ahead and get the book because this sounds great. I'm going to go and get it. You also have it on audiobook as well, which is awesome.
Yes, I do, with a fantastic narrator, Michael Ferriolo, who was so wonderful. And actually, my boyfriend did the music that you will hear in the background of the audiobook, too.
Oh, wow.
Super, super talented.
So you're well connected, right? With talented people. There you go.
I got good people around me.
Yeah, there you go. Well, congratulations on the book. Amazing.
Thank you so much.
I always admire authors that can come up with new worlds and just totally... things that we don't think about, you know, mm-hmm. because then it's not like thinking, okay, I'm going to make another James Bond movie or book or something like this where it's been done a million times. That would be easy.
Mm-hmm.
But this, you didn't take the easy road. You know, you took the more difficult, challenging road, and it looks like you came out with flying colors. So there you go.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate you both having me on. It was so wonderful.
Of course. You're welcome anytime. The book is Fenrir Chronicles, The Prince. Nanishka Torres, thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're amazing, and the book sounds great. And everybody go out and get it because it's got a story that you're not going to find anywhere else. And I love novels, and I see this was published last year or the Audible, at least I see last year. But
yeah, that was more recent.
Yeah, I guess I'm on the audio page, and so I don't know how many pages and all that stuff, but that's irrelevant, really. At any rate. Nanishka,
you'll enjoy it either way.
Absolutely. Nanishka, thank you so much for joining
thank
us
you.
Again. All the best to you.
Thank you again.
And you're welcome back when you have new stories and more to tell us, because it sounds like a fascinating world that you created there.
Well, so, thank you. And I definitely hope to come back with the second book.
Awesome. And if you're ever in L.A., you're invited here. You have an open invitation. So there you go.
Thank you so much.
Now we'll make it worth your while to come to Hollywood for a mm-hmm. few days.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you. And
thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Always getting great people on the show.
I'm telling you.
I mean, the amount of talent. That
I get inspired by these authors because I want to write something of my own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you will.
I will.
There you go. And I'm a great consumer of books, as everybody knows, but I really don't have the inclination to sit down and write one. Maybe I will in my old age, but...
Of course. You can do anything you put your mind to.
Right. No. I mean, I know, but it's... sometimes it's just like with movies. You know, I enjoy consuming movies. I have no desire to make one. I like being behind the video camera and actually shooting and stuff. Nothing wrong with that. But if I had to put together an entire movie and produce it...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I want to write, direct, produce... act. I want to do it all in a movie.
Sounds good.
Yeah, or a show or something.
Well, you see, so eventually what you'll do is what many other people do, and it'll be to start your own.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
We've had several people here, mainly women that I remember, in a few cases where they started their own show.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't know how to produce a podcast, and then I figured it out. Now I have a podcast on iTunes and on LA Talk Radio. So
there you
know.
But it's not a podcast. You got to start calling it a radio show because you're on a radio station.
Well,
now.
It is.
Because let me tell you,
it is
a
radio
podcast.
Show, and I have it. It's a podcast.
But
as well.
when you say podcast to people, they think you're doing it in your home. You know, alone.
No, they don't.
And stuff. Why?
Because I've never encountered.
Well,
people
but that's
thinking
what
that.
I. Oh, I don't
I
know
can
why
call
you
it whatever the heck I want to
okay,
call it. It's my
that's
podcast.
True. Who the fuck am I arguing with here?
But we are on the radio. I do tell people that our home is at LA Talk Radio. We are live on the radio, and it's also
okay,
up
cool.
on iTunes.
But okay,
yeah.
cool.
But
cool.
for market, it's podcast. Not I don't say it just to say podcast. It's podcast.
Oh,
you see what I'm saying here?
Now
play
I get
on
it.
Words.
Okay,
but
well,
don't worry.
Obviously, you have to say that now.
But don't worry. Everyone knows our new home is at LA Talk Radio.
Real, that's awesome. And you guys are doing great. You know,
thank
you. Have,
you.
Great
Do you
shows.
Have you guys gotten any feedback from us?
No, I haven't.
That's
but
okay.
Yeah,
it
I
will
mean,
come.
You know, people don't write to me about other shows.
Right.
Sometimes they will.
Okay.
But at any rate, you know what I have? I have something I saw on Facebook. Sometimes I get so irritated because you can't unsee things, right?
Yeah.
And once you see it, then I keep having in my mind somebody with a dog.
No.
Squeezing the skin and worms
stop.
Coming out
stop.
Of it.
Stop.
Okay,
stop.
Okay, so
that's
I know I
much.
Should stop that.
Why would you say that to me?
Because,
I don't need
you know,
to
I had
this.
To share
I know.
This shit.
Please don't.
I keep seeing this, and why can't
no.
I unsee it?
No, no, no.
No, you've
no.
never
that's,
seen
I
it.
I don't need to see that.
Right. But, okay, so at any rate, let's move on to other things.
What's going on in the world today?
Okay, well,
I saw the UN Nations speech this morning.
Yeah, you want to talk about that? Because I haven't heard shit about
yeah,
it, but there's
we
headlines.
We can talk a little bit about it. The one thing, whatever, the one thing that he kept saying something about we're going to stand together and fight for freedom and blah, 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 and peace. But it's like fighting for peace is like such a...
But it's always fighting for peace. Think about it.
No, but then he followed it up by saying that if... Like, he's going to basically, if North Korea does one more thing, he's going to nuke 25 million people.
Well, he said if they actually do something against us,
right.
not just...
No,
yeah.
no, no, again.
He says we would totally destroy them.
Right, which is not helpful, per se, you know, to make threats like that.
No, but you know what? This
it
is
doesn't
the language
help.
They understand. You see, just like with Saddam, man.
I don't
remember
know.
The mother of all wars.
Let's say that is the language they understand, right?
Right.
But to us, the American people, it doesn't make us feel safe.
No, but what does make you feel safe?
Just assurance that we're going to continue to keep the conversation going with North Korea and that we're going to work on, you know, finding a solution, like putting the American people at ease rather than like when he says stuff like that, it gives people anxiety.
Right. But what conversation with North Korea are you talking
about? It doesn't matter.
About?
Just
but
as
it's
a
not
president,
happen.
His 100%.
I mean,
but
even
like,
with Obama,
it's irresponsible to make threats like that.
Why? It's
because his job is to like protect the American people, and that
no, it is. That's exactly what he's saying. If you guys try to destroy us,
but
we'll
that
destroy
threat,
you.
That threat is not helpful. It's not helpful rhetoric.
Why?
Because it's making threats. There are people in that country that are going to die.
Right, but North Korea is making threats at us that we're going to die.
I just don't think that like. That kind of language is helpful, regardless if that's really what's going to happen. I think he needs to put Americans' like anxieties at ease and assure us that we're going to be able
by
even
by
leave that part.
What?
We don't need to.
We
come
have
on
no
that.
Control
you
over North Korea.
It's so
Rachel.
Sad. I don't care if we do or if we don't. It's just so sad that we are now the way he talks and the way he delivers speeches. Like, look at any past president, Republican or Democrat. Like, they don't speak the way Trump speaks. It
that,
doesn't.
Well, that's true.
And we have true. Normalized his behavior so that when he comes out and says things like we're going to nuke North Korea, like I really feel for those people in that country who, you know, don't want any part of this, that they're born into this regime.
Yeah, but
and
why are you
to,
blaming this situation on us? You got to blame it on their
I'm
leadership.
Not blaming it on anything. I'm not blaming any.
Did.
No, I said I feel bad.
Right.
I'm
that
empathizing.
They like, that they are what?
That they're going to potentially be... victims, like their lives don't matter simply because they were born into a country like North Korea.
But are you saying that we're responsible for their?
No.
Okay. So
I'm not.
That's
not
point.
What I'm saying. I feel sad.
Understand.
For
it's
me,
me,
I just think it's as our president, it's his responsibility to put us at ease. And by saying things like that and speaking irresponsibly, it just creates a rhetoric. And like think about it. Here's what I'm saying. When you see two guys or whatever fighting at a bar, a lot of words, or heated words are exchanged, and then they cool down and go back to their respect or whatever. But like that kind of language is so unnecessary, because really what they're trying to do is communicate, right? But they're using insults and this and that. And when he called him Rocket Man, I mean, that shit is so unnecessary.
But whereas, have you been hearing, that's okay. You know what, Rachel? I realize you really, you've given us the liberal leftist side of
things. No, George Bush didn't talk like that.
No. But what I'm saying to you is that you think by negotiating or talking nice, you're going to take an enemy that doesn't give
it's
a shit
about
you being
nice. It's not
about
talking nice. It's about creating a dialogue.
But there is no dialogue. We tried. We tried since the Korean War. Nothing's happening. These people are like so paranoid because they've been.
That's fine. That may not work, but saying shit like that on national television doesn't help either.
That's your opinion. I think it does. I feel more secure when the president says, you know what, you want to attack us? Then this is the consequences. You know, and the thing is this also, another thing about the left is you guys want a utopia, you want a perfect world, but the world is not perfect. Every peace that was ever reached was through war. It's always like that. You know, go into the history books.
I never said that I wanted a utopian society.
No, not you. I'm talking about the left in general. I just said that. I said, I think about the left in general, but that's where you are politically and everything. So
I don't know necessarily if it's about the utopian, because I think a lot of people on the left are coming from a place that we realize like the world isn't perfect, but it's about doing the best with what we've got and helping each other and like just, you know, trying to do the best with what we have. I mean,
that's a naive thing, because we have enemies.
To take care of the shit that's going on in our country. We want health care. We want access to health care. We don't want to send our troops over to countries and fucking get involved in places that we don't need to be involved in. We don't want to be in Iraq because we shouldn't even be there in the fucking first place. Like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to like focus on taking care of our country first.
But all the terrorists are coming from there. Don't you think we need to do something?
That's not even a left. Like ID, that's not even, no, most terrorists and things that happen in our country are performed by oftentimes white males, like shootings.
Oh my
and
God.
Like
I mean,
that.
But around the world, I mean, we're bombarded by extremists and you're like totally ignoring it.
That's not that has nothing to do with it. But right. Also by the whole terrorist thing, that's also focusing, we need to focus on our country.
Right.
So I'm agreeing, like, we need to take care of ourselves. We have a lot of shit going on. The climate change problem is a fucking huge problem.
Right.
Like, look at what's happening in
Rachel,
in the,
with all due
Atlantic.
Respect, you changed the subject. We were talking about North Korea right now.
My answer to that is we need to focus on our country and not be getting involved in fucking fights with North Korea and escalating it.
But what if they... what if they initiated
it? And it was the Republicans. It was Reagan who didn't put an end to this arms fucking race back in the day. I was watching Oliver Stone's The History of Us yesterday, and Reagan could have ended this nuclear war thing, but he refused to agree to the agreement with Russia. So, I mean, it was really the Republicans.
And you really? And you think that North Korea and Iran and Pakistan and India and Israel,
if we all agreed to it, and then,
We all agreed to it, you see, it's a lot of ifs that won't ever happen, because you have enemies.
But we also gave weapons to Iraq and Iran. Like, we're the ones supplying these people with weapons,
too. Someone gets up to kill you, you kill them first. That's the rule. You don't sit there and wait for them to shoot you and kill you. You have to defend yourself.
100%.
And
but
you're
I don't think that we need to escalate it in any way.
We're not escalating it. He's responding to what's happening. He didn't come out of the thin air and just said, you know, Korea this, Korea that. That guy's insane. He's going to set us on fire. So what do you want to say? That's his language. You know, and one last thing is that I'm saying, please accept the fact. That's why I don't know why liberals won't accept the fact that we have enemies. It's like regardless of whether we want war or not, they're going to take us into war. And
we
all
do
of
accept
history,
the fact that we have enemies.
So if that's the case, if that's the case, and then you have to,
I guess
you have
for,
to defend
I
yourself,
guess,
right, against the enemies. You have to defend yourself.
I just think there are other ways, like, we have to create a dialogue first rather than send troops and people, because people are going to die and it's going to cost money and it's so unnecessary. And a lot oftentimes, like, there's no reason
but
that we need to even be involved.
People have died in wars, Rachel. 100%.
But can I tell you something?
Yeah.
What happens at the top of politics, we're so naive to really what goes on behind closed doors. There's so much corruption and shit that goes, like, business dealings, like with weapons, like giving weapons to our enemies, and then we go in and fight them.
Right,
you know what I mean? Like, we don't really
know evidence for, you know,
there's evidence. We watch Oliver Stone's History of America. We've been giving our enemies we sell them for bits, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This stuff happens. And what I'm saying is, at the top, war is a business. People make money off of war, right?
Okay, but now.
Still.
But what I'm saying,
people make money off of war, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
people, there are people
always make
people,
money
it's
off
a
of
business.
War. It,
and
not
what
only
I'm
that,
is,
it stimulates the economy too.
Right.
You know?
And
it
also
makes everybody worse.
People
so.
Die.
Right. Right. But it's
and what
inevitable.
I'm saying is,
that's what I'm saying.
I don't
inevitable.
Know. I just feel like a lot of, like, I wonder if
there
are
other
ways.
Do you know what it's like? Okay, let me tell you why maybe you can't relate to it. Look, I come from Israel. There's an existential threat. Okay, existential threat. In other words, if we lay down our arms, we're dead. So the same
thing
here, Rachel.
It's hard to compare Israel because
no, but this is war.
100%. But I just feel like the thing that sucks is in Israel you have three of the biggest religions in the world fighting for real estate, essentially over religious reasons, over religious importance, right? And the thing in our, like, and that to me is sad, because at the end of the day, everyone in that circle believes they're the right one, right? And it just sucks, because it's like, dude, take the religion out, and we're just humans. We're just people trying to coexist. Like, I wish we could do that, because
again,
you know what
you
I
see,
mean?
It's all wishes and ifs, Rachel, because you know it's
right.
It's not going to happen.
But that, but
it
but
never happened.
100%. But like, I just wish that be like, it's. I just don't think going after and killing people. And just because there's always going to be more people.
Okay,
do you know
see,
what I mean?
Do you see America as a killer country?
Like, as we...
I mean, as,
what do you
as
mean?
We, do you see us as like...
100%.
You do?
Yeah.
Like a country that...
We used to have internment camps
that
would...
Kill.
We used
yeah.
To, and we held African Americans as slaves. I mean, we go into other countries like Iraq and just kill civilians. 100% we're killers.
Oh, just for the sake of it, right? Is that what you're saying? Because
there
they
are
don't agree
soldiers
with us?
Who did go into Iraq and kill just innocent children.
Wow.
There's a lot of stories about it, of officers that went rogue and crazy and just killed like innocent people because for whatever reason...
Yeah,
we are killers. Are you kidding? Thanksgiving.
We're defenders.
What is the story of Thanksgiving about? We came to America. We saw Native Americans, American Indians, people who were here way before us, and we killed them all and took the land. We are built on blood, this country.
Do you know a country that wasn't? Tell me. One country in the world that wasn't created after a war.
The question you asked me is... Yeah. Do you, I think America is a country of killers? And I gave you the answer.
Okay,
yes,
which is yes, you think. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's the thing, you see.
But do you know the story of
Thanksgiving? I believe
in
American exceptionalism.
But do you know the story?
And I think we're better than
everybody
else.
But do you know the story of Thanksgiving?
Yes, I do.
You know that we came from England or Spain or wherever Columbus came from and came to America, where people were already living, who had been living here for however long.
Right, right, okay.
And we killed them.
Okay, do you know
someone... And then... took America as our own.
Okay.
So, yes, that was my answer to your question.
Right, okay.
Your follow-up question, which has nothing to do with the first question, is name a country that hasn't been built on that.
Right.
That doesn't matter to your first question. That doesn't make it right.
No. Okay, well, let me explain this.
That doesn't make it right is what
okay,
I'm saying,
what I'm
just
saying
because
is,
other countries are doing it. I'm just saying that we are not innocent, and the whole the whole idea of these like white supremacists and people thinking that America is like the greatest, best country in the world, and that's fine.
No, you're going to extremes. You see, now you put me with.
I agree.
No. You put this opinion with extremists.
What I'm saying is, I do think America is great. I think America is
exceptionally great. I think,
but
we're
not perfect
in the world.
We're
not perfect,
and we have done some of the worst atrocities and
do you know who,
world.
Really? So who saved Europe in World War II? Do you know that if we weren't
not
there,
even like
you
less
would be
than,
living in
less
a Nazi,
than like 60
you would be
years
living
ago,
in Nazi
we were enslaving
world.
African-Americans.
But
you
see,
know what I mean?
But that's the point.
People
is that
of our own country.
You're ignoring. Rachel, you're not even listening.
I'm just saying that we are not so great
history.
In our history.
You're ignoring history. What I'm saying is
you're ignoring history.
Why? Which one?
Because
which one?
I told you we are
what?
Just as guilty. Thanksgiving, no. The story of Thanksgiving.
Okay.
How America was founded.
Okay, so that's it, right? Let me ask you, in modern times, are we a killer country now?
Yes.
We are.
Yeah.
Okay. So in other words, we're evil. Right?
America is not perfect.
America is evil. Is that what you're saying? Because we're
there
killing.
Are a lot
I think
of
like,
parts
for example,
to America that are very evil and corrupt. Yes.
Okay, but do you think that's what makes us like, say, an expansionist country? Do you think it makes us like want to take what other people have?
Huh? What do you
mean? That's what I mean. I mean, are we an evil country? How do you see us?
I see America as imperfect, and I think that there's a mixture in politics of people who genuinely want this country to do well, and then there are people in politics who have vested interests from wherever, their personal lives or
okay, but that
whatnot,
doesn't negate the
who
fact.
Who don't have America's best interests at heart, and a lot of times those people are in positions of power.
Right, but that doesn't negate the fact that we have enemies that want to destroy us, right? And that's pretty much how we
I
started
I agree
this.
That there are people who want to destroy us 100%.
Okay.
But I also think that we are guilty of destroying people and going into countries and being in places that we don't necessarily belong.
Mm. Maybe because you feel we don't necessarily belong there, and let's.
But I think a lot of people agree
with me. Rachel, we're totally out of time. No, absolutely. I think a lot of people agree with you.
And
everybody
there are people
on the left
agree with you too.
But you see, that's the point.
And it's
that's
not
what's
just
beautiful
people on the
about
left.
This,
there's
Rachel.
A lot of people in moderates who feel the same way.
Well, yeah, I mean, because there's things that are on the right that I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, but what I'm saying is, I like this because we argue two opposing views that are classic views of left and right, and I don't think, like all other political conversations, I don't believe any of these will change the other side's mind at all. So that's why I like to keep these civilized, and we managed to do that, and that's why I love having you here, Rachel. You're awesome. So, and that's the thing, folks. It's not a personal thing. We sit here on the radio. We argue points we're passionate about.
And then we go and smoke a joint.
Exactly. And that's how it works, folks. Stay tuned for other shows right here on LA Talk Radio. Rachel, thanks so
always.
Much again. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel exclusively on LA Talk Radio.